Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. I wish I could say that this past week has been a week filled with brotherly love and tender tolerance for everyone. I wish I could say that there were no instances of religious persecution and that the laws of every land upheld the belief system of all people. And I wish I could say that Liberty Magazine had to close its doors because there was no need to educate and inform readers concerning the attacks on religious freedom that are both widespread and devastating to so many. I wish I could say these things, but I can't. So I guess Liberty Magazine needs to keep doing its thing because we need to keep ourselves ready to protect what religious freedoms we enjoy. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is with us today. Lincoln, your job is safe. Seems we need you now more than ever. Do what you do best and share with us what we need to know as we continue through this challenging year.
Well, it's going to be a challenging year. That's certain, even though we're barely into it. Most of this year already for me has been a time of travel. I've crisscrossed the United States and immediately went to California, then New York, then Florida, and now I'm back with several stops at each of those legs, but I'm now back in Maryland. But this radio program gives me probably the first chance this year to sort of sit back and think, you know, what's really happening?
Yes.
And when I put my mind in that sort of a frame, I can't help but think of an event that I attended on January 12 down in Richmond, Virginia. It was the annual banquet and dinner for the First Freedom Foundation, which is, as far as I know, not connected to any church, but it's all about religious freedom. They have on their board of directors a ex-U.S. ambassador and some other luminaries, and they've distinguished themselves by not so much doing things, which all organizations do, but they gather together a very representative group every year, and they particularly reach out in acknowledging people that have done things internationally for religious freedom. They've had some wonderful awardees in the past, and last year, I think we spoke on this program, it was someone I worked closely with, Dr. John Gratz.
Yes, absolutely.
Head of the International Religious Liberty Association and also the Secretary General of the World Christian Alliance, I think it is. Mm-hmm. But this year, it was a wonderful award, and They acknowledged someone that I hadn't heard of before, but everything about him I had thought much about. The international recipient was Canon Andrew White, and I'd never heard his name before. Mm-hmm. His predecessor I had. Remember, wasn't it Terry Waite, the Anglican cleric who had been held captive it was well over a year, as I remember, a hostage in the Middle East. Yeah. He was the predecessor from the Anglican Church to the current head of the church in Iraq, this Canon Andrew White, a fairly youngish man, I would say no older than 40. And he has a young family that live with he and his wife, and their young family live in Iraq. And it was amazing to hear this very English man, this very clerical English man, say that Iraq is his home. That he identifies as one of the people. He says, I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. And he explained how of the nearly 1 million Christians, the vast majority have either been killed or have left Iraq. Yes. It's an unsafe place for Christians. But he says, I'm not leaving. But he says he's seen dismembered bodies in the streets. Mm. He's seen heads lying there. Mm. He's been kidnapped himself twice. He's been held at gunpoint innumerable times. The church has been threatened. He says, many of my parishioners have been killed. He says, it's very dangerous. And he explained how many of the factions pick on them, even though he explained admirably and at great length, and I can't even do justice to it here, how he's been involved in any number of initiatives to reach out to the different religious groups, minority and majority populations. He's anxious not to make a homogenous sort of a religious faith. That's never going to happen and would not be appropriate, even if someone could bring it about. We don't believe in syncretism, but he's trying to bring human charity and accommodation between all belief groups. And you know, he's gone a long way toward that. Probably not to make much difference to the country as a whole, but with many people who've been touched by his efforts. I was touched at the end of it when he stood up there and took the acknowledgement and the award that was put around his neck, sort of like a gold medal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't see it the same way when he said that he is at personal threat. So, you know, what's a little medal if your life is at stake?
Exactly.
But he said something very interesting. He says, please pray for us. He says, with the United States leaving, and he didn't comment on whether the U.S. should have been there in the first place or not, but he says, given that they're there, they obviously have been protecting Christians and other minorities and people that are at threat. And he says, with the Americans leaving, he says, it's very dangerous. And he says, we are afraid. Mm-hmm. We are very afraid, he says. Pray for us. You know, it's a sobering sight of what it is to stand for religious freedom. For me, it probably doesn't have anything more earth-shaking than possible heart attack from overeating on my trips. No, yeah. That's only a half joke.
Yes,
it's
that's
a real
true.
Possibility, but it's not a direct threat for my religious liberty work. But for most of us, it's very important. We have serious conversations, but it's not threatening our very existence. But for Canon Andrew White, for him to stand for his faith, but more than just standing for his faith, reaching out and working for religious freedom for others, it puts his very life at risk. And that's something I'd like to remind our listeners. This is serious, serious business that we're about. It isn't just a theoretical thing. It isn't like the campaign speeches of the different politicians who say different things to get elected or overemphasize something for rhetorical effect, you know, make it sound worse than it is so they can get elected. In many ways, I don't think we make the religious liberty or lack of religious liberty in the world sound as bad as it is to most listeners, because it's impossible to communicate the visceral personal threat that people of faith in some countries like Iraq are placed. I mean, it's just how a human being can live day in, day out with young children. Like he even said it, they go out to play and they hear bombings in the distance and so on. You know, that's an imminent threat that continues moment by moment. To live life like that is not enviable, but admirable.
You know, this reminds me of a conversation I had with the president of the Adventist Development and Relief Agency International, ADRA. After he had told me about some of the projects ADRA was working on, I said to him, I said, when you sit down to a wonderful meal, when you have the food spread out in front of you and you didn't have to dodge landmines and you didn't have to move to a different country to enjoy this meal, do you feel guilty? And he said something that I believe you will reflect when I ask you the same question from a different perspective. He said, I don't feel guilty, but I do feel responsible. I want to do something about the situation in these countries. I want to sit down and enjoy my meal. At the same time, I want to be aware and I want to have something in place in my own life that is helping those who are not as fortunate as I am. And that's a wonderful thing for ADRA to say, because we want to help people in other countries. Let me ask you this question, Lincoln Steele. When you sit down to your potluck at church and here's all the saints are around you and no one is throwing bombs at you and there's no booming in the distance and no one has threatened you, do you feel guilty in this safe environment? What do you feel knowing what you know about what's happening beyond our borders?
Well, it's not so much guilty, because I can't do, you know, I didn't cause it,
right,
and so on. And I'm doing all that I can to get the word out. But the way you put it there is the best explanation I've heard. And I've never given an explanation myself, but to explain why sometimes I get a bit frenetic when I'm giving talks.
Yes.
I've spoken to a few of our religious liberty leaders that try to poo-hoo, or not so much deny the facts, but, you know, you're a bit overexcited. And you know, it's not going to be a Sunday law anytime soon, or religious freedom safe in the United States. Well, those things might be true here and now, but you can't take anything for granted once you really understand the global situation for religious liberty and its decline. Of course, knowing prophecy, as I study it and you do as a Seventh-day Adventist Christian,
yes,
the Bible says very plain things about the times of the end, which I think we live in, where the love of many will grow cold, persecution will increase. We can't be fatalists, and we need to work till the last minute of our life and of Earth's history to communicate spiritual values and to create an environment where people can discover that, which is called religious freedom. Mm-hmm. But we can't be complacent on this. We really need to examine ourselves. And you're quoting an ADRA leader, but I think of John Donne. But didn't he write that poem where he says, "Ask not who for whom the bell tolls, yes, it tolls for thee."
That's right. That's right.
You know, no man is an island. Mm-hmm. We have to realize that more than ever, the world is interconnected, and there's a good side to that, you know, trade and knowledge and some of the good things in life can be shared quickly and easily. But it also, I think, on the downside means some of the negative elements, the infection can spread globally.
Yes, yes, yes.
It can be contained more easily in the past, but the negative as well as the positive goes in the wrong direction. Now, back to the meeting in Richmond. I don't want to say too much more about it, but Canon White and the other recipients, there were national and local recipients, and, of course, the directors of the program, but they all agreed. At one point, most of the major figures were standing up front, and they all agreed that this last 12 months, of course, that's the last year, but all of last year, mm-hmm, as they look back on it, clearly, and with hardly any qualification, religious freedom has rolled back in a dangerous way over the entire world. And they included the United States. Mm-hmm. It's not that we are to be compared with Somalia or somewhere like that, but relatively speaking, it has not gotten better in the United States. And I think the other day you and I spent a whole program talking about some troubling religious freedom or lack of talk during the election campaign the Republican primaries. You know, in other countries, it may manifest itself as violence against people of faith. We're not to that point. But the attitudes that enable religious freedom are hardening even in the United States. And so as these leaders and Canon White, coming from one of the more egregious situations, but as they looked at the whole world, they agreed without any discussion, just that it's drifting backwards very rapidly. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about the condition of the world, state of the world right now when it comes to religious freedom. Lincoln, I've heard you say on this program many times that we need to keep ourselves ready and we need to be armed and knowledgeable about these things. What should be our attitude? Let me just ask you that question point blank. What should be our attitude when we sit in our churches and we sit at our potlucks and we have all the freedoms that we seem to want? We don't want to be alarmists. We don't want to be pessimists. What should be our attitude as we live our lives in our church and in our communities when it comes to religious liberty?
Well, we don't want to be pessimists, right, because a pessimist implies that you see no solution.
Yeah.
You know, pessimism is looking on the dark side rather than the possibilities. Yeah. But I think we want to be alarmists in the best sense.
Okay, good.
We want to raise an alarm.
Yeah.
Because that's precisely the problem, I think, that outside these immediate areas of conflict, far too many people are unaware of them and are complacent in their own situation. Unfortunately, even within some of these areas of conflict, those people that are in the majority who are not threatened, they are also very complacent. Mm-hmm. It's often not until someone is personally touched by intolerance or persecution or the harsh reality of lack of religious freedom, then they become vocal. There's that old statement, I think, that's more related to what happened in World War II with the Jews, but it says, you know, first they came for the communists and then they came for the Jews and so on. You know, it goes through the longer progression, but it says, And then they came for us. But it wasn't until they came for us that I suddenly became concerned. If you don't worry when these other things are happening, it may be too light when it touches you.
Well, that really underlines Christ's statements. You know, your neighbor is your brother. Your neighbor is your family. If someone's coming after your family, you have a very different reaction than if someone's coming from somebody, you know, that you don't even know. But we need to have this brotherhood of man concept. So I think our concept, you just answered this for me beautifully. The concept that we need to have is that when they're coming for someone else, they're coming for us too. They're coming because we're all a family. Am I on the right track here?
Absolutely. And this is one of the reasons that I get so worked up about lack of general civil liberties. I mean, maybe lack's the wrong word. The decline in general civil liberties in the United States. It hasn't yet touched most people, but if you extrapolate from what some of these changes represent, yes, it's dangerous for all people. And we should be concerned when even the lowest or the least important person is needlessly marginalized by law or by societal prejudice.
That's probably why you put that picture on Liberty Magazine not too long ago of a little girl with her hands folded in prayer, and right behind her is a hulking tank.
This was from Tahrir Square. She was in front of a tank that had come. This was early on when it wasn't real clear whether the military were there to help them or to protect them.
Yeah. And we need to look at that little girl and say, that's my daughter, that's my sister, that's my cousin. We need to have that kind of connection with these people over there who are struggling. And that's the only way I can see that we
Absolutely.
Can become involved.
Well, and you're showing me that was a good picture to put there.
Oh, amen.
We do know that most people respond positively to pictures of children and curiously of pets or animals in a situation like that. It sort of goes to our heart and unlocks an emotional response. But, you know, it should bother us as much if they're sweeping street people away and sending them to a bad end. Even someone unattractive, as the Declaration of Independence said, you know, endowed by the Creator with inalienable rights. Right. The rights should be inherent no matter how apparently worthy a human being is. Just to be a human being should place them on the same level of rights as you and I. And even in the U.S., this is diverting a little from our general theme, but it troubles me when I hear politicians and even some of American regular citizenry making comments that, yes, a citizen has legal protections, but a non-citizen shouldn't. Mm. It really, if other than issues like voting and whether you pay tax and so on, the question is not whether you're a citizen. There's not another moral law for citizens. It's how you treat human beings and what status you accord another human being. Mm. You know, taken to the vanishing point, that demeaning of the other is what lies behind the Marines, you know, urinating on dead Taliban.
That was sad.
I don't think, because we didn't have video cameras back then, but I can't really imagine that have happened in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Because even though there was hatred and bloodshed aplenty then, they still saw it. They were fighting against people like themselves. Mm-hmm. And as Abraham Lincoln said, you know, both sides were praying to God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's all too easy when we're looking at either a war or religious conflict in another country, to think that those people are sort of a lesser other. But everybody has the same aspirations, the same rights. I mean, I'm not defending what those presumed Taliban would have done, but we need to look closely at other people and empathize with their situation and not take it lightly in some supposedly third world country that they are restricted in their rights of practicing their faith. They're as deserving of it as we are.
Even if their faith is different from ours.
Okay. Absolutely.
That's an important thing because we tend to like to gather together in like-mindedness, and we tend to marginalize those that don't believe as we do, but that is wrong. That goes to the very core of the breakdown of religious freedom, where we make sure everybody's just like us.
Absolutely. It's not necessarily theologically wrong because somebody, one of the religious faiths is bound to be correct, that theirs is the view from God and the others are false views. Yeah. But when you're dealing with religious liberty and the abstraction more so of all people having the right to find the God and worship him, you have to allow that in the bigger picture, even you might be wrong.
Because
they will think the same. If you allow someone who thinks that they have the truth to restrict everyone else's right to the truth, you've got overt persecution. That's exactly how it comes. So the safest thing in the religious liberty construct and the most morally correct thing is to allow everybody the full, complete, and unqualified right to seek spiritual security where they can find it, mm-hmm. and to worship whoever they want. And, of course, you, if you have the truth, under that construct, you're absolutely free and unhindered in presenting yours to them. And if they so choose to change, they're unhindered in changing their allegiance. And this is where a lot of our persecution in the world, particularly in Islamic countries, comes from. They do not allow the right of somebody to shift religious allegiances. People can change their minds. And if, you know, I particularly want someone who I think might be wrong, they should have the right to change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if I grant it to them, it has to be granted to me, or, you know, it has to be a universally applied dynamic, not in isolation or not colored by our view that we're somehow spiritually superior to someone else. But as far as our personal faith and individual adherence to our God, I mean, that can be very narrow in the sense that it's absolutely directed to an ideal, and you have to believe that that's true, and you put your life on the line for it, and so on. But there's a little distinction between how you go about your personal salvation and the ground rules you allow for all others who are in that same search.
We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about the issues and the overarching issues that we need to be considering today as we maintain religious freedom around the world. Lincoln, Liberty Magazine, of course, is a tool that you're using to reach people and to give this message to them. I want to right now just invite people to stop by libertymagazine.org.
Absolutely. We want people to read it.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And there's the articles are there, the cover art is there, and also there's a lot of area where you can comment on things, even on this program if you want. You can listen to past programs. So I just want to take a moment and just invite you to libertymagazine.org when you have.
And we're in the middle of our annual awareness promotion. A lot of it involves going to individual churches. A lot of it is sending out promotional material. And some of it is reminding people that listen to programs like this or watch programs like our television show that we have every week on 3ABN. I think it's a privilege to be able to support something like this. Obviously, I'm the editor, but I would think the same even if I was just onlooking with Liberty
Magazine. Absolutely.
You know, we all have some means, and most of those, especially listening to a program like this, are under some obligation or under some burden to do something. So, you know, God, the higher power, has granted us, I think, the ability to do something about situations. We're not to be passive. And so if we have money, if we have an inclination, please, this is the time to send it to Liberty, and we'll put it to good cause, good purpose. We send out nearly 200,000 every issue, and that's all from donated monies. We start for the president, the Congress, the Senate, the judges, the lawyers, the mayors, all of these community leaders, as well as your neighbor. They need to have a regular discussion or read a regular discussion of what religious freedom really is.
I want to spend the next couple minutes before we close our program today to ask this question. As a church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, you and I belong to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, what are we doing as a church, besides putting out Liberty Magazine, what are we doing that could be a good model for other churches to follow in trying to be more tolerant, be more forgiving, be more accepting of people of other faith?
As far as those of us working for religious liberty, I think the model that we're proclaiming is the very best one. We're not just trying to improve situations legally or societally for our own church. We've accepted early on that unless all people of faith or even lack of faith are unhindered in their spiritual journey, there is no religious liberty. So we argue for a universal approach, even though our doctrine is very specific. We're not wishy-washy about what we think is truth. We're quite directed on preparing the world to recognize and anticipate the return of Jesus Christ. But this selfless, I say that because it's not just me, but this selfless concern for the freedom of others is something that should be encouraged, not a partisan view of religion. All too often, some of the religious liberty proponents, they'll go into a country and they'll try to free up detainees from a certain faith, or they'll argue that a certain faith should be given greater privileges within the country. Mm-hmm. If there's a problem with persecution or restriction of religion, it's not usually just with that one area. It's usually that the whole construct is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I say that knowing that even in a Muslim country, say, where they're persecuting Christians, it's a bit more than that. If you dig deeper, you'll find that in those same Muslim countries, they are persecuting Islamic minorities aggressively.
Yes.
Like in Iran, the Baha'i, you know, they're in a netherworld. People can't quite categorize them, but they're their own religion with some roots into Islam and even a slight link to Christianity. Mm-hmm. But they're persecuted without mercy in that Islamic country. We should have a concern for all of these parts of the spectrum of faith.
Hmm. I've heard it said that in most things it has to get worse before it gets better. Do you think that this is the worsening that's happening before it gets better?
Absolutely, because I think what lies behind this is a whole wide array of stresses in the world where resources are shrinking. The old norms of trade and of the old order of things, to borrow from the new world order sort of. Yes. But, you know, the world is in flux and there are great stresses. It's easy to forget, but at the moment there are more people starving than have ever been before. Mm. And starving people leads to war.
Absolutely.
That leads to religious conflict. In the United States, we're fighting a war on terror, and part of that panic and that war footing directed against fanatical religionists of a certain religion has put religious freedom and indeed civil liberties at greater threat than before. We're more willing to compromise those things that only sharpen mm-hmm. the religious divide.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we know that it is going to get better because Jesus will come and he'll take
Well, it's
care.
Going to get better beyond the
beyond
troubles. But the troubles are going to come to a real crisis.
Yeah.
But in that regard, we shouldn't be fatalistic because, as I've said in our campaign, and we're sending out all around the United States particularly, this is a time of trouble, yes, but it's a time of opportunity. Because people are by conditions and by the stresses, they're looking around seeking a solution more than ever. And when we discuss religious liberty and the rights of all people, I think there's a listening audience that can change. And since the world is in flux, why not let's work toward it changing for the better, even if globally it may not. In your area, it can improve. In your neighborhood, it can improve because of your witness. Churches in your area can be more free to pursue their spiritual direction and less harassed by the community if you encourage this separation of church and state and this adherence to a spiritual agenda for the individual. That shouldn't be inhibited, no matter what.
Mm. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. Lincoln, thank you very much for these insights.
Always a pleasure.
My. Until next time, listener, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.